Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えない。
あ、こんなところ
に。I miss you.What's good, Internet? It is Monday, September 18th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 97. We're recording this one from our various homes. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me, Patrick Klepek.
Centris. Actually, that makes it sound like I'm chanting the game Centris.
Centris. Shout out to Samantha Coleman. Centris. Also joining us, Rob Zachney.
Why hasn't anyone held a town hall in here? Why is nobody holding town halls? It's a disgrace.
We haven't held a town hall since we launched. We promised when we launched.
That's an AMA, right? Is that like the equivalent
of like a... That's true. I did one AMA. I've done one town hall. I answered a bunch of questions. Most of them, they were surprisingly about giantbomb.com. Who knew?
Oh, wow. Austin, are you saying that the legacy of your career will largely involve questions about a previous job you had for years after you had that job?
Yeah, has that happened to you before?
Nah, man. That's just a theory.
How's everybody doing? It's Monday. We were tossing some hot references there to a really amazing video by a candidate.
Look up on YouTube Dan Helmer for Congress, H-E-L-M-E-R. He'll take you to the Helmer Zone, which...
You can also do a search for Helmer Zone. It's unlisted. That video's unlisted. You can't do a search for it.
Well, search it on Twitter, because it's currently getting roasted by a lot of people. My guess is you'll find it on Twitter if you search Dan Helmer.
It's good. It's good because... It's also a Top Gun parody, which is really relevant in 2017.
Timely for the youth. Well, I guess technically they're about to shoot Top Gun 2. So maybe
Are
Top
they?
Gun's... Oh, yeah. Tom Cruise is coming back. Handing it over to those millennial guns. I think it was...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're straight up shooting Top Gun 2. So maybe Dan Helmer, we're not giving him enough credit for like laying the groundwork for when Top Gun 2 is a hot button issue in 2018 during the congressional race. So,
I have
Dan
a question.
Helmer.
I have kind of an important question, which is Top Gun 2 in the same canon as the Top Gun Nintendo games? And more importantly, the Top Gun Combat Zones, which was released for the PS2, and that had FMV. I believe that was the one with FMV. There was definitely, or am I just thinking of a fake game?
Hold on, Top Gun.
Top Gun
the
FMV
The only Top Gun
game.
Game I ever played was the NES game, where landing your plane was like next to impossible.
Yeah, I bet if you went back now, you would be better. Because let me tell you, the trick about that game was we were children. And we were bad at everything. I think I'm thinking of Top Gun, Tomcat Alley, a fantastic Sega CD game that is fake Top Gun, basically.
You know what was real good was U.S. Navy Fighters. Do you remember this one?
I don't.
It was a Jane's game.
Sure.
And those were generally like, you know, trying to be hardcore Sims and everything. But with U.S. Navy Fighters, they went in a direction where they were like, you know what the flight sim genre needs? Is an FMV campaign about the fallout from the breakup of the post-Soviet Union.
Yeah, great.
And it was real good because it was like a super... It was in some ways like a super dry flight sim, but then Command and Conquer cutscenes.
Oh, that sounds perfect.
But like... It was like somebody is trying to make a West Wing episode out of Command and Conquer cutscene elements.
They actually got Aaron Sorkin. They were like, this is it. This is the new generation. Patrick, I was definitely thinking of Tomcat Alley, which is a fantastic Sega CD game that is about flying planes and looking at bad FMV.
But there was a Top Gun game released in 2012.
What?
Top Gun Hardlock was released in March 2012 for 360, PC, what? And PlayStation 3 by 505 Games and Paramount Interactive. The player takes the role of a pilot named Lance Spider Webb, who graduated from
Bad.
Top Gun.
No, no. Like Spider, and then his last name is Webb, W-E-B-B?
Hang on. Dude's name is Lance, and it's called Hardlock. Maybe this is finally just going to dive into that gay subtext.
Finally.
In Top Gun, maybe someone finds like it's 2012. Now we can finally just make it canon that after the credits rolled, Maverick and Iceman got married and opened a combination B&B and combat flight school.
It's great. It's from having my honeymoon. It's perfect.
They got the relationship on hard lock.
Is Val Kilmer going to be in this new Top Gun?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I'm in. That's it. That's all I needed to know.
Really? You're in?
I mean...
You'll see it.
I'm in.
You'll see it on iTunes or Netflix streaming.
Yeah, I'll see it eventually. I'll be in a bar one day and it'll be on.
No, man, I'm going to go to the 70mm IMAX show. I'm going to travel for that one. I'm going to be like, wait, I'm sorry. This was filmed, of course.
Of course.
And I see it as it was intended to be seen.
God, so besides Top Gun, what's everyone been up to? Top Gun and bad congressional fundraising ads. What's everyone else been up to?
I need to hear about this the Battlegrounds match that you fucking accidentally got yourself into after you finished streaming today.
So we streamed this morning, you, me, and Danica, and we were desperate to get a fog match, and we never got a fog match. It just never happened.
For people who don't know, there was a recent patch that added a low...
Correct.
Frequency, like it just doesn't come up on the dice roll of like what kind of environmental setting you're gonna get, but there's a fog one which would add a lot of like weird dynamics theoretically to playing, and so we've been trying to get that this morning and we didn't, but then you rolled one last time.
I was like, I'll just hit play real quick just to see if I can get into one, and I forgot to uncheck squad mode. I meant to go to solo and I just matched up with the squad and I was like, ah, fuck it. Let's see if it's a fog game. It was a fog game. The fog is so dense, guys. It is.
I'm watching this video. That is. That's a real ass fog.
It's real ass fog. So I linked. I actually captured. Thankfully, I hit the ground. And I was like, "This is wild. I have to capture this whole video." So I started recording. And the experience, first of all, playing it just generally was already very strange because of how much it cuts. The visibility, right? Like, you're used to being able to see so far in PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. And here you can still catch, like, a silhouette, but it is really a silhouette. It is just, like, black on white because there is so much fog. And so I had this experience of just, like, immediately hitting the ground and then, like, running inside, getting guns like normal, and then just seeing movement in the distance. And as I was chasing them, the people, it felt like I was a slasher movie villain because... Like, they felt like they were terrified. They moved in ways that were, like, they weren't making smart plays. They weren't playing the game the way you should play this game. And I ended up, like, getting two great shotgun kills.
Oh, my God! I'm watching it right here. You just knocked them off. One, you skipped over a crucial part of this sequence, which is that as you're, Jason Voorheesing your way across the Silent Hill landscape, chasing after this player that is clearly shook and does not know what to do. From the other side, not their friend, or maybe their friend, comes over with a motorcycle, flips the motorcycle, falls off. The motorcycle skids in front of them.
Yes.
I'm assuming they actually weren't grouped up, but then both get on the motorcycle together, and as they're about to try and speed away, pull out your shotgun and stop
that. I actually think that they were together, because early on in the video, the two of them are both getting onto that motorcycle, and I shoot one, and one hops off, which to me suggests how shook he was. He was just like, no, I can't be here. I can't be anywhere. Uh-oh. And so his friend, like, circles back around to pick him back up, and that was his fatal mistake.
I want a fog match.
This is the thing. That's not even why I think this game was good, Patrick. That was how it started.
Okay.
And I'm just going to describe what happened next, which is...
Uh-huh.
I zoom out the map after that kill. I do some more looting, blah, blah, blah. I'm playing a Battlegrounds. I'm being cautious because I'm kind of near the school, which is a very hot and spicy place for people who haven't played this game. It's a lot of action.
Also, you got linked up with people. You're not playing solo.
Right. I joined a squad game, so there are four people in my team. But soon enough, two of them get killed or one of them drops off. And so then it's just me and this guy named Crispus or Crispies, maybe Crispies. And he's really far away. So for people who've played this game, I'm off to the eastern side of the map, nearest to the school, and he's like dead center, near where like the river splits, and there's that little mini island where Patrick, you and I met our fateful end the first time we almost got a chicken dinner. And I'm like, I'm gonna go link up with this dude. I have a lot of stuff. I had like a lot of healing. I had a lot of good items, and so I like get onto that motorcycle that I took from those people, and go across the map and like drive it into the river and swim up. And turn on my voice communication just in case, right? Like maybe he'll hear me, right? I'm like, is there a way for me to type? I don't see any way for me to type, so I'll try to talk. And I try to talk, and I don't get a response. And then we hook up, and like he sees me, he pulls a buggy up to me, and I like do the thing where I like, shake my mouse a couple of times to like make it look like I'm shaking my head or something, as if like, hey, yes, I see you. I'm communicating with you. You're not responding to me talking. I'm gonna mute myself. And I'll drop two. I dropped two first aid kits to be like, look, we're gonna team up. Like I know we're on the team already technically, but like we're actually gonna play this as a team. And he's like, we get in the buggy and we start going through the ruins, which are these like old, like very dense area of like old, you know, stonework and a little tunnel, not tunnels, but little like divots and stuff. It's hard to move through that place with a buggy. But in fact, he hits like a rock at one point, and I kind of laugh to myself because I'm like, oh, this guy's new. Like he's trying to use a buggy in the ruins. That's not what he should be doing. And then we go on this completely fucking wild run through the ruins, or past the ruins, where just like things pop in and out of the fog. I'm again linking to both of you to a video of this segment. Actually, go back in the video I just linked a few seconds, because there's like we come at the end of the ruins, and there's a church, and I just catch a figure in the fog up on the top of the church, like, and he's like taking aim and shooting down at us. We're like, pulling away from that gunfire. People just pop in and out of the fog as you go forward, because like. It's dense, like it's sort of similar to playing like an old N64 game or a PS1 game like Silent Hill. And it's just like, oh shit, like there's a car now. Now there's a person shooting on this road. It's like kind of terrifying, but we get through it. And he takes us to a little compound with like a fence and like a three-story building. And we climb the three-story building, and he like sets up shop on one of the roofs and is like, I am going to be a sniper. Like I just
And he's not talking to you?
Right? No, like, talking, no okay. Communication, right? Very important for the story. No communication outside of just like what we could do with body language. He ends up climbing to the third floor. I go to the third floor. I'm like, I guess he's looking this way. I'm going to go look the other way. And I go get set up, and I kind of peek over to see what he's up to. And he's dropped from the third floor roof to the second floor roof. On rewatching that replay, you could hear him like load a new clip into his chamber. And he jumps down there and then starts shooting. And I'm like, what is he even shooting at? Like, he's not calling out positions, right? He's just like... That's it. He's just shooting. And so I look through my scope into the fog, and I can't see anything but a little smoke in the distance. And then he hops off the roof and just starts running. And I realize in the kill counter, he's just got two or three kills. And we get over there, and there are four bodies all just scattered on the ground near this empty car that he's killed at least half of those people, if not more. And like, holy shit, like I'm with a fucking killer. And like, I thought he was a new player because of the way he was driving that buggy. No, he's a killer. And we start like moving up the blue wall. We're trying to stay inside this zone. And it's like 17 people left or something. I'm convinced, like, not that we're going to win necessarily, but this is like, I was like, this is going to be the real shit. Like we're at least going to get like a wild ending. And so we go into the final zone with two people left, me or with 20 people left, something like that. And climbing up a hill, and we like come over the top of the hill. And like, this is the first time I've been in a final zone in the fog. And it's just like, it's so hard. It's so much harder because you just can't see movement in anywhere. You just can't see it anywhere because the fog is so dense. It is, like, really spooky, but we're, like, staying very close to each other. And then we end up, like, up against some trees with, like, 20 people alive and what is a pretty small circle for that many people. And he gets hit, and he goes down, and I see him in the distance, and I make the decision immediately. I'm going to run and go try to save him. And then he says something, and I can't decide if what he says is, trees, as if to say they're in the trees, or please, as in, please come res me. Like, and it's the only thing he says. It's at like one, in the video I just linked you to, it's like 140. And it's just like, please. And it's like, and then I'm like running, I'm like sprinting, I'm trying to like juke and weave, I'm trying to, you know, zigzag pattern, trying to serpentine. And I just get caught, and I just die in the fog next to my new friend, Crispies. And it was like one of the most memorable games of this game I've played in a long time. It's so fucking good. And like, I am excited to hopefully get to play with y'all with like in the fog at some point, because it's so transformative of that game. And it's exciting just be like, because it's so rare that you see something in a game like this. Like, I don't know. I've mentioned before, I don't follow games like I don't stick to a single game for a long time. It's not a thing I do traditionally. So it's been exciting to see how it evolves like this and how it can produce these different sorts of experiences as it adds new modes, as it adds new weather effects. I'm so excited for new maps. I'm so excited for new stuff. And like, it seems like such a small thing. I'm just going to add fog. But like, it's such a huge, huge like change in tone.
It's transformative enough that I think they should consider allowing you to opt in to this. Like, I think the other weather modes are not like the
rain
the,
is close.
Rain is close because the way it can screw with the sound. But I almost wonder if they should, if they continue to, like, at some point, I feel like they're going to add a night mode. Like, that just seems inevitable that they're going to add, like, some sort of a variant that plays with the lighting effects more than the sunset does. And maybe the way it'll work is that they'll start introducing playlists that are like, hey, if you want to be in, like, the weather variant
playlist. Right, bad like, weather.
Right, like, you're not necessarily going to get locked. You can't just pick fog game.
Right. But if fog, you want to be rain, in dark.
Yeah, inclement weather, like snow or whatever, like, you know, like, there, I would like to see them, because this is cool. And I think what the problem is that by making it so rare, you're essentially trying to convince people to not, like, drop out of a queue,
right,
jump back in, and hope they get into the queue that gets to the fog. Now, granted, this game has so many people. It passed the concurrence for Dota of 1.26 million or whatever.
Which someone pointed out in our chat this morning while streaming, Dota's a free game. Like, Dota obviously is a hell of a thing to get into. It's a very hard thing to actually, like, wrap your head around and play, like, you know, seriously. So I get why that difference is there. And PUBG is, like, notoriously good at hooking people. But boy, like, the fact that it beat that in concurrence. So what is it up to now? Like what did you just say? 1.26
It's
million?
It's 1.2 something million concurrence. It did that over the weekend. Like, if you look at the Steam Spy numbers, which Steam Spy has since admitted that they can't keep up with, like the way they like scrape Steam's API, like, cannot keep up, I guess, with like what's happening with Battlegrounds. It continues to be an exponential graph up, and zero signs that it's slowing down. Like, there's actually speculation that I saw some amongst friends that like follow sort of like press releases and how companies talk about sort of like corporate speak of success. Uh-huh. And that there's a theory that I think has some legs, that the reason Activision and Bungie couldn't be like more celebratory about Destiny was because of Battlegrounds being a success story that immediately sort of like wipes everything else. And also points to Destiny made their metric of success engagement and concurrence, which is like, I wonder if that's going to be one of the new like things that we see more, like, sales essentially have gone out the window, like, the ever since the NPD group rolled over and said, told publishers, we won't release data unless you choose to release it.
In fact,
everything has gone digital so much, in a way that even when the NPD does want to do estimates, like, it's hard to actually understand if they're getting accurate information. I wonder if concurrence and engagement, like, that sort of metric now becomes like the judge of whether a game is popular. Like, it's one thing if your game sells a million copies, but if you have a million people concurrently engaged, that says a lot more about the viability of your game than an actual sale does.
Right. I'm curious, because I'm curious how flexible those numbers are in some ways. Like, obviously, in Battlegrounds, I'm guessing on Steam, what that means is the game is launched, right? But I'm guessing if you're on the Destiny server, if you're Destiny, if you're Bungie or Activision, like, what does engaged mean? Does that mean playing missions? Does that mean, like, you know, being in orbit? I guess Destiny 2 is pretty good about not putting you in orbit. But I think about Destiny 1, where I would sometimes just have that game on. I would be in orbit. I'd be, like, waiting for a friend to come on and, like, not be doing much of anything versus, like, playing Crucible, playing a mission, like, where I'm actively actually playing stuff.
Well, the game kicks you off. The game kicks you off after like 15 minutes of idle time. So my guess is like they must measure that in terms of are you like if Destiny 2 is launched, that doesn't count. But that if you've hit X and logged into a character, even if you've idled for 15 minutes, you've made the conscious effort to log
to start that game.
The Destiny gamer has logged in.
Oh no! Is that the same as the woke gamer? Is the woke gamer a Destiny? What class does the woke gamer play as?
Well, theoretically, he plays a warlock.
Theoretically. God. But he doesn't do violence. He's against all violence. He won't ever shoot anyone from the Vex or the Fallen or the Hive. Especially not the Taken, so...
No, definitely not the Taken.
Ugh, God. The woke gamer. So what else is up, other than me playing PUBG and PUBG being very good?
I don't know, Rob, what have you been up to?
I didn't do too much gaming this weekend. Well, I did some tabletop gaming.
Hell yeah.
And, I had a brief... Something went wrong the other day when I was doing some tabletop gaming.
Good, that's how all good stories start.
Yep.
Okay, so I was out visiting one of my friends was out in the Berkshires. Friend of mine, he's been on Three Moves Ahead. David Heron, who's a really smart game designer and one of the most infuriating people to play a board game with because he's got that like long-time game designer ability to quickly suss out like the way the game is meant to work and the trade-offs that are in play.
Yep.
And then figure out really quickly a way to play deploy an optimal strategy, right? And that will happen in your learning game against him. So you really want to be sharp for a game like this. And what we decided to bust out was a game called Eclipse, which is a tabletop 4X strategy game in some ways. And it's like explicitly like drawing from the same language of the 4X genre. You sort of reveal the game board. It's like you get these stacks of hexagonal discs that you sort of create the game board out of.
Yeah, this game was released on iOS too for people who, if anyone thinks that this sounds interesting. In fact, it's on Steam now too. Eclipse New Dawn for the Galaxy over on Steam. Its art isn't great, but that game seems okay.
Yeah, and it's really cool. It's it really is like it takes everything you find in a 4X strategy game for the most part and like condenses it down into, you know, probably everyone knows what they're doing. You can get an entire game done, you know, inside of 2 hours. Certainly within three, which isn't bad for a tabletop strategy game. Okay, great. So that's the plan for the afternoon. But first, I was like, we need to get some beer. That's definitely what I should do. And I hadn't really eaten. And the first thing I'd done when I got out to Western Mass was go hiking in the woods for a couple hours and got lost. And so I was a little dehydrated, all this stuff. So I go to the liquor store and buy what I thought. If you're familiar with the offerings of a brewery called Founders, they're pretty well known for a lot of good beers. But in particular, I'd say they're sort of specialists in stouts. Which tend to not have too high an ABV, alcohol by volume. And, you know, I enjoy stout, so it seemed like the way to go. So I grabbed, an Imperial Stout off the shelf, bring it home.
That's one of your many AKAs, by the way.
So I get the Imperial Stout back to the place, crack it open, start pouring it into a glass. Weirdly, it's not dark the way a stout beer is. It's a very thick, viscous amber beer.
Okay.
And I taste it, and it's really cereally creamy. I don't know. There's something weird about it. But it's certainly not a stout. And I look at the bottle, and oh no, it's an imperial malt liquor.
I think you mean oh yes.
In there,
that's the 20-year-old Patrick is definitely saying, "Oh yes."
In their insufferably hipster way, the founders' copywriter is like, "Yeah, you know, a lot of people disparage malt liquors and they don't give it the credit it deserves as a beverage." So this is our take on malt liquor. And, you know, let us know what you think. But, you know, we think you'll enjoy it.
So, did you?
And, well, debatable. let me explain what happened next.
Implied in that is that although you took issue with it and had problems with the marketing of said product, at no point do I have gotten the indication so far that the choice was made, I'll have something else to drink.
No, cool. Because, you know, we brought it home, and I didn't want to be classist. Like, if somebody is trying to gentrify the malt liquor, who am I to stand? Like, sure, I can get down with malt liquor, fine. It doesn't have to be like it was in college.
What a centrist.
So, yeah, I finally let it hold a town hall with my liver. And halfway through this glass, like, I lose contact with the feeling in my face.
Oh my God, Rob!
It's bad.
No, like we are talking within moments of like, I don't drink that much anymore.
Right, of course, so, like, your tolerance is lower. It happens.
Yeah, so we're talking within moments. You know, like, you can be in those situations where you shouldn't be drunk, or you should not be as drunk as you are.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And immediately you're like, I can't let people find out I've done this. Like, because they are setting up the board. They are going through the rules. They are explaining the rules and mechanics to me. And I'm like, where are my lips? So then...
And then you can play this game. Like, you then have to play this game.
And at least once. How long is the game supposed to go? Maybe 2-3 hours?
Yeah, two Ooh. Hours. And Ooh. Yeah, it shouldn't be too bad. But like, I am halfway.
I don't know. That sounds like a long time, Rob.
Yeah.
I'm halfway through this.
Well, it's a long time to not feel your face.
And the problem is, I'm still really thirsty, and so I just start like, I basically crush this thing.
No.
And
then I go and get another.
Yeah, of course.
Because you know, I'm just somehow.
We just gotta power through it, buddy. We've all been there when we were 22, and that's a bad place to be.
Oh. So this is when I got caught, is people noticed that I appeared to be, like, sort of zoning out during other people's turns. I had to keep, like, having things re-explained. I had to keep getting really close to the board game components
This is extra funny because I've seen Rob just dead tired at E3, and I can just imagine that, like, except also people all around you are very actively playing a very complex board game about spaceships.
And so... Somebody's like, somebody in the kitchen who wasn't playing the game is like, wait, Rob, did you know this is 14% alcohol?
Oh my God! Rob!
And I was like, suddenly a lot of things make sense. including the fact that I appear to be getting car sick just sitting in this chair.
Jesus.
Playing this board game. So, long story short, I didn't make a great showing.
No, you didn't pull that one out? You didn't, like, come from behind victory?
No, I sort of developed a mania pretty early on, which is that I noticed that if I did the, like, economy building actions,
sure,
I knew how they worked,
yeah,
and it appeared that I was engaged with the game, and... So I could sort of, like, play it off like I was just really focusing on the boom stage of, you know, the Rush Boom Turtle.
Uh-huh.
And just, you know, wasn't being too aggressive. It's you know, it's not that I didn't understand approximately half the mechanics of the game or how they worked. It's that I was just choosing to focus on my strategy. And so I built the most impressive economic engine in the game. Like, I was loaded with resources, and I was, like, ready to start, like... I started to sober up a little bit, and I started being like, all right, time to figure out how to build spaceships. By that point, I realized other people have been building a lot of spaceships. And then they've been researching, like, guns and stuff to put on them.
Ugh.
And I didn't. And so I cratered my economy trying to crash build a fleet that was basically, like, you know, Spanish galleons versus like Nimitz-class aircraft carriers. It did not go well, but I sort of muddled through it, and a good time was had by Heron.
But not by you.
That's an incredible. Well, no, your good time was relaying that story to me and Austin.
This has been your good time, and that is it. God. That's this is the dilemma of all social interaction is embarrassment and shame. And
yep.
If you're out there, if you drink responsibly, check the bottle, make sure it's the thing you think it is, and at the percentage you suspect.
Yeah, see, there were a few safety checks that I kind of failed during this process.
Well, and the thing is, you had outs. That's the other thing is, imagine you had noticed that it said 14%. Then there would have been no weird social foul of you being like, ah, I bought these. This is way stronger than I thought it was, guys. Ha ha! I'm gonna start drinking water and start eating food to recover the nutrients that my body needs to live. You would have had the out, and you didn't have the out.
Nope.
Or you didn't take it.
Just had to keep colonizing planets for no good reason. Just had to be like, I'm going to colonize again. Are you sure? You're getting pretty spread pretty. Late game.
I look forward to your What If Rob Zachney Was President video series.
Oh,
my God.
Oh, deep cuts. Okay. Patrick, have you been playing any video games?
I've continued to work my way through the Dishonored expansion. I think DLC is probably not as we can.
Yeah, it seems pretty large, right?
I've played like 4 or 5 hours of it, which I think like puts it outside the scope of a DLC. Or I think what's more likely is this was probably I think they did 2 DLCs for Dishonored 1, so I think like maybe they just kind of like squished everything together into like one larger thing. And as I mentioned, I went over a lot of my initial impressions on Friday, which is that, and I'm going to write about this after the podcast, is that I find the DLC continues to enact my desire to not be a pacifist and instead engage in a violent streak, which is how I've continued to operate in Death of the Outsider, which is the opposite of how I've played recently. Like, so for example, like one of the like sort of like side missions that you come across is that you end up in a bar, and that bar has a bartender that you are supposed to kidnap, but you're supposed to you can't kill them, and so you're supposed to try and knock them out, but the bar is full of patrons, and then upstairs there's a separate side mission that involves you finding somebody's brother who went missing. And as it turns out, and like this is a slight spoiler for if you're that sensitive about some of the side missions in Death of the Outsider, is that you find that they are connected to like a blood machine that is being transfused into these sort of like rich elite of the world of Karnaka, who are using the blood of people who are being purposely brought to the brink of death, so that their connection with the void, which is the, you know, where the outsider lives and has his powers. So you can essentially try and have like a void high by extracting the blood of those who are on the verge of death. And so I end up like disconnecting his blood thing. And then that causes all the people that were connected to that blood to pass out, like they're in unconscious state, not dead, just unconscious.
Right.
And I went over to them and I slit their necks, and then slowly methodically cut off their arms.
Why? Like,
these fuckers don't deserve to live. They kidnapped this poor poor ruffian, connected him to the brink of death, and then just slowly siphoned his blood at the top of this bar. And then it came upon me that, well, everyone in this bar is here for that reason. They are all complicit in the actions of what was happening upstairs. And so I came to the only conclusion that was possible to get this bartender out of there unconscious was to knock him unconscious and then kill everyone else. And so I just...
Well, this doesn't sound centrist at all.
No. I just... You know, I chose violence. They have this... I was mentioning on Friday, they have this new weapon in Dishonor and Death of the Outsider called the hook shot, which is what you can attach to parts of the environment, and then it can yank people across the room.
All new powers? Does she have?
All new powers. Cool. That are completely wild and can change the way you play the game. And so you can set the hook shot to violent or nonviolent. And so basically, I just like instigated the bartender to come after me, had him get hook shotted and unconscious, and then I funneled everyone in the bar to come up through the stairwell, and then I just had them walk over mines and into all sorts of other nasty traps that I had set up. And then I took all the bodies and then stacked them on top of each other in the bar, because in my character's mind, I wanted it to be a statement when the police came and were like, "What happened here?" It's like, "Oh, we know what happened. Those people upstairs, they had their arms and their legs cut, and then there's a stack of bodies." And so that was the mark that Billy left on that bar as she went on her way. Jesus. And brought that man's body.
You're like a Batman villain. You're like a vigilante in a Batman like comic where Batman has to be like, "Listen, I know you're trying to make the world better, but you can't do it like this."
Well, it's like the feeling I've had is that, like, even when I played a sort of passive character in Dishonored, I think anyone who has played, like, the stealth passive character where you're trying to knock people out instead of kill them, there are moments in that game where you meet a character or you're in a situation where you want to break that code. You're like, "Fuck, these people deserve it. Like, this isn't, like, I don't necessarily have to live by this code of, like, knocking these fuckers out. Like, right. Maybe they do deserve to die." And I just chose to play, like, this character as that is just their disposition from the start.
She is ready to go already. She doesn't need to be convinced that some people need to die. That is who that character is.
Yeah, and I feel like it fits the backstory of Billy and her relationship with Dowd, and actually fits canonically with, like, how they talk about when she originally, like, got the powers of the Outsider by running around with Dowd. They strongly imply that, like, she was very much a Robin Hood, but that a Robin Hood that slits the throats of the people she's taken money from. And so it seemed both as my desire to play Dishonored differently and to role play differently in that world, the character fit that in a way that I don't feel like the characters in Dishonored 1 and 2 naturally lent themselves to characters that made sense to be characters of a violent nature on a, like, a moment-to-moment basis. Like, it just didn't make sense for, like, Emily Caldwell, who is going to theoretically, like, take back the throne, that she would have, you know, left a trail of, like, hundreds of bodies on the way there.
That's a bad way to go into the business of ruling people, is just like, "Oh, by the way, I killed 1,000 people between the time I was deposed and now."
Yeah, it just didn't make sense. Like, it made
no
sense.
No ruler's ever done that.
By myself. With my magic powers.
It just didn't make sense for me when I was playing that character. It made sense as, like, I'm going to play that game a second time and then like to do the chaos route. And I guess I should mention, just because you weren't here for Friday's show, this game gets rid of the chaos meter. So you were not...
Yeah, so you're encouraged, effectively, to just go wild.
Right, so at the end of a mission, it does, like, do the thing where it tells you, like, here's where you fell on the scale of, like, anarchy and violence and passivity and stuff like that, but you aren't explicitly judged as, like, a, you know, a good, bad, or, you know, chose a side
thing. Does it still have the thing of, like, there are alternative ways to deal with your targets, the way that, like, the main Dishonored campaigns do?
There haven't been as many instances where I've dealt with an NPC or a character that would set themselves up for those sorts of things. This DLC, at least so far, seems to be a lot more about interacting with environments and, like, random guards, as opposed to setting up, like, really elaborate decisions that you can, like, from people who played, like, previous Dishonoreds. Like, there's often the easy route, which is just to go and kill the character that you're after, or there's, like, much more elaborate, sometimes actually darker ways of, like, taking care. Like, there's one in Dishonored 2 where it's one of the geniuses, like the architects of a lot of the stuff in the city, you can hook him up to some sort of, like, brain scrambler that, like, completely, essentially, you take away his genius. Like, he did things that were good for the city, but largely participated in systemic actions that meant that technology was, like, used to, like, oppress the lower parts of that region. And so, like, yes, you could kill him, but isn't, like, the darker thing to do is to, like, scramble his brain and have him live out the rest of his life not realizing that he was ever a genius and not realizing what, like, the way that, like, they portray the dialogue in that portion where you get, like, a little hint of, like, what his future is going to be, is that it's not that he is completely sort of incapable of, like, wandering and engaging with the world, but it's just as though everything is slightly outside of reach mentally. Like, that feeling you have where something's on the tip of your tongue.
Like that feeling where maybe you go to get a beer, but it turns out to be a 14% imperial malt liquor. Is that the feeling?
Yeah.
And your face goes numb? Okay.
Yeah.
That's always been weird. Like, going back to the first Dishonored, there's one of the first choices you make is like, I want to kill this pair of brothers or send them to a labor camp for the rest of their lives? And the latter is the good option. So,
well, I mean, I think that's one of the cool things about Dishonored. I think it's always knowingly played with the faux morality of a lethality scale. The notion that you can somehow keep your hands clean while also like permanently eliminating people from public life from the board. And so like there's a lot of times where it's like, oh yeah, you perish the thought that you kill anyone. Mm-hmm. This creepy stalker just wants to take your target and abduct her and keep her as his prisoner on his creepy island for the rest of her life. That's cool, right? That's better than murder. and that was the thing that like I could never be complicit in that in the game. Like I was like, this is too this is a political assassination. That's the punishment that fits this crime. But I'm not getting involved in your bullshit.
Right.
But what was cool is that the game does kind of throw this out there is like. But, you know, really, like, the important thing is how you feel about your morality, not the actual effects that your actions have on others.
Right. Did you ever have a feeling of, and I think this is a larger topic to some degree, but when I played both Dishonored games that I've played, and I haven't beaten either, because despite really liking them, they're very stressful for me to play. And that part of that reason is that it feels like I'm going to miss something if I fuck up. That, like, I want to see those optional endings because I know that someone in a room somewhere wrote dialogue for me doing that. And that, for whatever reason, feels like it means I'm missing it if I get just the regular assassination. Do you ever feel that way about Dishonored or games in general, where it's like, I want to do the extra hard thing just because I know that there's extra content associated with it, even though on paper I would say that's a foolish thing to do or feel?
Well, like, for example, without spoiling exactly how it works in Death of the Outsider, like, I constantly find myself in playing the Dishonored games where I'll make multiple saves during a mission, because if I end up discovering about halfway through, like, sometimes while just exploring around, you'll come across a notebook that it, like, would have set up, like, a longer, more convoluted, interesting way to approach what you're doing as opposed to the more direct approach. Like, for example, in the mission I'm on, I want to exactly explain the items. I'll just say there's an item that I needed in order to break into this bank. And you can go to the black market, which is where you purchase, like, upgrades for your character, and you can buy extra bone charms and things like that that you don't find in the world. And you can just straight up buy that item there for a ton of money.
Right.
Like, enough that you'll definitely most likely have that money, but that you could skip around doing the more convoluted way to get it. The more convoluted way to get it ends up involving you using one of the powers in the game, which allows you to assume the face and body of someone else temporarily, and sneaking in to an auction and then bidding on the item, right? So I did the short version originally because I was like, it says I need that item. I'll just buy it here. That seems reasonable. And then I noticed that the option to go to the auction disappeared off my map. And I was like, whoa, okay, wait, fuck.
Right.
I actually want, so I went and reloaded. And I was like, I'll keep in mind to have $800 or whatever the Karnaka coins are, like, to come back and get that if for some reason I screw up or that ends up being like a not fun route. But instead, I went down that route and it was way more satisfying.
I bet.
It was like an extra 45 minutes, but it was a way more satisfying way to get the item that I needed
than
to
just
complete
spending
that part of the quest. Yeah.
Totally.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Well, like, and that's I started the beginning of Divinity: Original Sin 2 with Janine Hawkins, who's a Waypoint contributor, over the weekend. She has been doing, she did the review in progress over on Polygon, and was like, oh, I should do some multiplayer. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll start a new game. And I started playing that, and in the co-op, it immediately feels like it's so easy to separate yourself from... Okay, so I should set this up, actually. Divinity Original Sin 2 is the sequel to Divinity Original Sin. It is a computer RPG. I guess it eventually got a console release, I think.
It did, yeah. At least Xbox One.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. One, because the combat is really cool. The combat is a tactical, kind of turn-based, isometric view. You move your units around on a map. You have, like, a couple of characters that you can control. If you're playing multiplayer, it's like you and you have, like, your character and a companion, and your other friend has their character and a companion. And it's really clever and very much based on, like, status effects, but not, like... Not like buffs and debuffs. Like, is this person standing in water? Is this person near, like, poison gas? And then having those tags, those effects, interact in interesting ways. So if they're standing in water and you hit them with an electricity attack, then they'll be stunned for an extra turn or whatever, right? And that stuff is fascinating and really cool, and it makes every combat encounter feel, like, fresh and, like... It makes you feel smart all the time. It's like, ah, this is how I'm going to deal with that, right? Or, like, you build a character that has an ability where, like, the character that I built has the ability to, one, they're undead, which means that poison heals them instead of hurts them, and healing spells hurt them instead of heal them. And two, I have an ability that's, like, whenever I get a kill, I get a couple of action points back. And so there's lots of, like, good, like, okay, I'm going to take off the smaller character first so that I get the kill and get those bonus action points, which gives me enough points to then move into the poison that will heal my character at the beginning of the turn or whatever. And it's, like, that's, like, really fun and clever. But that stuff happens in between these kind of, like, long isometric exploration, like traditional throwback, like, old school computer RPG, Baldur's Gate styles, you know, that sort of era, Neverwinter of RPG. And in the co-op, like, there's nothing keeping you with your partner. You just go wherever you want. And it
that's the like, really interesting thing about that game is that it allows you to, well, not even just the co-op, but it's a game that from its original conceit in the foundation of the design, it allows the players to basically do whatever they want. And like in the original game, and they double down on this in the sequel, which I haven't played, but I've read a little about it, is you can kill every major NPC quest giver in the game. And then more so in the second one than in the first one, the game then accounts for other ways for you to complete those quests, even though you've technically killed the quest giver who may have given it to you in the first place. Like, it's a game that, like, when games say player choice, like, that's usually, there's usually a lot of caveats, and, like, the Divinity series seems very much in, like, no, like, we're going to let the player, like, do whatever the fuck they want, and then
there are
the
still
game
lots
adapts
of limits,
to the consequences.
Right?
Right.
The character I was playing as was a, there are limits and also not limits, right? Or it's not that there are limits, I mean, there are, obviously, but there's also limits in how things can react, right? So I was playing a character named Fane, who is, so you can make your own characters, or they give you, like, six origin characters who have their own backstories and unique dialogue, and some unique powers, which is interesting. I have to pick this guy named Fane, who is an undead skeleton person, who is from, like, a distant culture, way into the past that's been all but forgotten, and he's the last survivor, and he wants to know what happened to his culture. And he has, at the beginning of the game, he has this mask on that lets him assume the form of different types of beings, right? So he could, like, be a human, or he could be a dwarf, depending on what he sets that mask to be. If you take the mask off, the person who sees you when you do it is like, whoa, you're a skeleton person. No, I have to kill you now. You're a skeleton person. But if I just change from an elf to a dwarf real quick, no one responds. No one notices. No one reacts in any meaningful way. And that was one of those moments of like, okay, I can start to see the seams in the simulation a little bit. And there are other things like that, right? Where it's like, oh, I wish I could just do blank to solve this crisis, but I can't do that because the game doesn't have a way for me to grab the ladder from over on that side of the thing, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there are ways, there are limitations to what the thing is, which is interesting partially because it comes with a DM mode that I haven't dug into at all yet, where you can be a dungeon master, basically. And you can do things that just say, like, okay, roll the dice, and depending on if you succeed or not, will act as if you succeeded or not. And so there should be, based on what I've seen in the kind of preview coverage of that mode, the ability to have a little more wiggle room even there. But in the same way, like, there's just the fact that you're dealing with multiple players, even in the regular campaign co-op, it's so easy to miss entire branches or to feel like, I came into this conversation late. Does anyone want to catch me up on, like, the main plot conversation that I missed because I was at the market? Like, I was buying this pitchfork and this shovel while you were talking to this god. So what's going on? And that's just, like, a weird – it makes me want to just, like, play with the ball and chain attached to the characters so that I don't miss anything. But that's also a boring way to play it. And I want to be able to, like, loosen that up and be willing to be like, oh, no, I was over here doing a whole other side quest. I'll meet up with you later. And, like, it's just hard when you know that you're missing things in games sometimes. I want to get away from that feeling – even though I just want to get away from it.
There was a story that I read in, I'm trying to look it up. It was in Rock, Paper, Shotgun wrote about it, and it spoke to, in this game, correct me if I'm wrong, if you play an elf character,
yes, 100%.
You can eat
yep.
the flesh of characters and learn the story behind them.
Yes, they are flesh, they're corpse eaters. Elves in this setting eat corpses to, like, get flashbacks of the body that they ate. It's a lot, and it's also, there's, like, a weird thing for me in this game, which is I think all that stuff is super interesting, but I'm not interested in doing any of it. Like, I love the idea of, like, oh, these elves eat corpses or eat, like, body parts to, like, see into the past. That's, like, a weird twist on the classical, like, elves live a long time, and so they know a lot of things, like, trope. But I don't want to be that elf. I'm not out here trying to eat a corpse. Like,
here at Rocket Shotgun, they write, last week I found a shark that appeared to be stuck on a beach. I was going to return it to the sea, but we had a bit of a chat, because I guess some characters can also talk.
Yep, there's
a
perk to animals.
You talk to animals.
Yep.
And then I decided to sample some of the meat it had stuck between its teeth. I ate the meat from the shark's mouth. And that's how I found out exactly who the shark had eaten, and later that day, I broke the news to that person's friends. The shark, as far as I know, is still rotting on the beach. that's just, like, a really funny...
Yes.
Like, that's also part of... I played all the way through the original Original Sin, even though that's, like, totally not
yeah,
usually...
Yeah, that's not your game at all.
My type of game, but I think it was Vinny or Alex was just like... Someone else needs to play this game
right.
So that when we talk about it on Game of the Year, I don't seem like a person like this is screaming into the void. And so I decided to, like, dip my toes into it and end up falling in love with specifically the way that you can just kind of, like, break and bend.
Right, right,
like,
right.
For example, the thing I always loved in the original was, and I don't know if they, like, changed this in the sequel, but you could, if you knew, like, there was a combat encounter coming up, you could attack first. Like, you didn't have to wait for combat to begin. So I would, like, send a volley of meteors at the enemies I was coming to ahead of time. And then the game doesn't reset their status when the combat encounter begins.
Right.
They're just on fire when you start. And it was things like that where, like, most games would find ways to either not allow you to do that. And Divinity always just seemed like the kind of game that, like, eh, whatever, man. Like,
right.
That's fine.
That's,
like,
fine.
Go ahead and do that. And the story was not particularly good. Like, the side quest stuff was interesting. It had a great sense of humor that I enjoyed, but the story just went fucking off the rails in the last third. Like, I have no idea what was actually even happening in the game. It was really, just really poor storytelling that just, I lost the plot. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, fantasy was already, like, a tough sell
on me. That's why I was, like, surprised that you'd played it.
Yeah, but the gameplay hooked me in the same way that, like, Skyrim, like, I wasn't super right. into, like, high fantasy is just tough for me. I'm curious to see how, I don't have the time to play Original Sin 2, but, like, I definitely want to give it a shot, like, probably sometime early next year when I got through everything else.
It's definitely, I'm very curious to see if I put more time into it, what I feel about it. I've heard that there is a choice at the end of the first act that's, I guess you could compare it to the Witcher 2 story decision, where it's like, oh, there are whole parts of this game you have to decide not to see now. And that is, I mean, that speaks to what I was just talking about, right? Which is, like, that makes me, like, it bugs me out a little bit. Like, it didn't for in which, I mean, I didn't beat Witcher 2, so it doesn't matter, but, like, I was excited about Witcher 2 because it was like, oh, I like this decision based on what I've heard about it. I would love to actually make one of these choices and commit to it. But the one that's been described to me, and I don't want to spoil anything here with Original Sin 2, but it seems like it might be really frustrating in terms of shutting down interesting pathways, like stories that you were already on, and it's like, nope, you're not going to get resolution for that. You have to play again if you want that stuff, and that seems like a bummer to me. Like, again, that speaks to this thing where it's like, on paper, I want to be able to say, no, I commit, I'm willing to commit to shutting down other routes through this game. And there are other genres in which I'm comfortable doing that, in visual novels or something like that, where it's like, yeah, totally. Like, I'm playing a dating sim. I can't, like, I'm going to commit to this one dream daddy. It's going to happen. But I think maybe it's just like in RPGs, I've been trained to want the whole buffet, right? Like, no. If I have, you know, if I've opened up these quest lines in these factions, I want to see them all the way through. Okay, if I'm working on the plot lines for these companions, I want to see them all the way through. If I'm doing this thing with this skill tree and it gives me a special quest, and I want to see it all the way through. And, like, I think that that's just a me problem more than a game problem, but it's a pretty serious me problem. And I would, it seems like a big leap for me to, like, ask you not to keep going down those paths because RPGs are so big. Do you know what I mean? Like, I kind of want to go through an RPG and be like, yep, I'm done the RPG. I don't need to put another 60 hours into this. I'm done it. Which, again, maybe more of a me problem. Anyone else playing anything? Are we just about there? Oh, very briefly. I played Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. I only played story mode. I'm not your fighting game expert. We're going to run an article from someone who understands fighting games way better than me. but I started playing that story mode, and it's growing on me. I started it and was like, this is bad. This is silly. I don't like this at all. Like, yeah, I get it. It's Mega Man X is there, and they've combined X City and... what's the city in Thor? Asgard? X-Guard. Yep. And I was like, that's bad. And like, oh, Chris Redfield is here, and he's working with the guy from Bionic Commando and is also working with Captain America. That's weird.
Like, in the world of Marvel's Capcom, does that mean, like, Umbrella and the zombie outbreak?
I'll get there, because that's when it turns around, Patrick. Just wait.
What?
I'll tell you. That's when I started liking it. So I do the whole first set of things. I'm like, I get to the second, like, chapter of the story, and it's like Civil War. They, like, start doing Civil War-y stuff, where it's like, Captain America believes you should do this, and Iron Man believes you should do that. And, like, what do? They just fight it out at the top of Avengers Tower. And, like, that's how they decide who should do the thing. And they, like, come to terms, and they decide, like, oh, yeah, I guess we'll need the Infinity Gauntlet for this, of course. And then it's like, oh, they go to another place that's kind of like Monster Hunter meets Black Panther. It's very weird, and I'm still like, oh, this feels so forced and bad. And then they, like, cut to a group that has already won my heart. It's my favorite part of the story so far.
Uh-huh.
It is such a good team-up. It's a couple journalists you might know. Peter Parker. Spider-Man. And Frank West. And they Frank West from Dead Rising, of course. And they are infiltrating a little place called AIMbrella, a combination of Marvel's AIM terrorist organization and Umbrella. AIM is, of course, run by MODOK.
Oh, of course.
I swear to fucking Christ, sends Nemesis after you. It's very good. It's very aware of the thing it is. It's deeply corny. Frank West absolutely has covered wars, and he will tell you that for sure. That was the moment where it was like, God, there's a point at which, like, you're just looking at like tanks of bioorganisms. Chris Redfield's there too, and he's talking about, what are they called, Patrick? What do they start calling zombies in that fucking series?
Oh, God. I think I blocked out.
It's like bioorganic weapons, BOWs.
Yes. Yes.
Fucking.
Yes.
He's like, this is like, I've never seen a BOW like this. And it's Mike Hagar in a big tube, and Mike Hagar jumps out and puts Frank West in a fucking headlock. and then you have a fight, and also Frank West's super involves him taking a photo of himself. He, like, fucks you up, throws you into a pile of zombies, and then takes a selfie, and it gives you, like, all of the points. And, like, at that point, I'm like, all right, I'm enjoying this. This is worth me playing through. I'm gonna probably finish playing through that story mode just for that bullshit.
You've just pasted a screenshot of this in chat, and that's okay.
Yeah.
All right. I guess I'll. I guess I'll download that copy of the game I've got.
That's all I'm saying. He got 99,999 PP from taking pictures of zombies and Mike Hagar passed out amongst the zombies.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I have no idea if that game's going to be good as a fighting game. Don't look to me for that. Like, I'm enjoying it a little bit. I just don't know. I grew up playing those games in arcades, but like never got competitive. And so I really can only tell you if it's been enjoyable and goofy so far. And so far it has. We run a story this week from someone who's like in that scene and can tell you if it's actually good or not. But
yeah, well, it's interesting to see Capcom feeling a little bit of heat from like NetherRealm as they have these single-player modes, but there's, like, right. a movement away from single-player modes. And then NetherRealm sort of, like, revitalized the idea of fighting games having, like, a robust, like, yes. you know, as intricate, basically, story modes in, like, Mortal Kombat on. And I think NetherRealm has stalled in terms of what they've done with it. Like, I played Injustice 2, and it was fine, but that right. was mostly because, like, the plot device they right. had was, like, so ridiculous and fun that I enjoyed going through it. And I think it stagnated because Capcom has been so awful at, I mean, like, look what they did with Street Fighter V, like, releasing a bad single-player mode, like, 8 months after the release mm-hmm. of that game. Like, why even bother? And so, yeah, I don't know, it's curious. I'll play yeah. it for the goofiness.
There are some cool things in terms of mechanics there, where it's like, in the Monster Hunter Wakanda world, there was a match where it was like, I have to kill these, like, seven Ultron Sigma robots quickly, because if I don't, in the background, a giant Monster Hunter monster was like throwing itself against the walls of Wakanda and trying to break in. And there was a timer on screen, and like you just see it like slowly trying to break in, and you have to kill them quick enough so that the Hulk can go stop that monster. And that was cool. It was cool, like, to be like, all right, then the Hulk is gonna go throw whatever, whoever was out there with a Ryu. It's the Hulk and Ryu team up. It's a whole thing. The Ryu is like the Hulk's research assistant, basically. What? And like, okay. they're leaning all the way in. I'm really glad yep. about that part of it, because when the beta came out a few months ago, or the demo or whatever, well, of the story mode, it was like really lackluster, and it was just like a bunch of like trite one-liners. And this is at least leaning into how goofy it could be. I'm actually talking about it. It's making me excited to try to put some time aside tonight and maybe get through the rest of that story mode, because it's goofy fun, but it's like a good way to make hours pass by.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us today. I don't really have time to get into some questions, unfortunately, but we will do that later on Friday. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Patrick?
Find me at Patrick Klopik.
Rob Zachney.
At Rob Zachney.
Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint, at waypoint.vice.com, facebook.com/waypointvice, youtube.com/waypointvice. And make sure to catch Waypoint Presents on Disney XD. If you're in Eastern time, that is 11 p.m. this week on Thursday, 11 p.m. Thursday. It is a good episode this week. This is the Evo episode, Rob, that I know you and I both gave some good notes on and thought that was very good. I think I just
a lot
say,
of fortunate things happened around that shoot.
Yeah, like that was a shoot, and we can talk more about this later, but like we went there like, oh yeah, we'll follow these two stories and see what happens. And one of them is like a heartbreaker. I mean, they're both heartbreakers. But we are in the right place at the right time, and our incredible production team followed the right people, is what I'll say. And we got some great kind of behind the scenes coverage of people who kind of had us all biting our nails. So check that out this week, Thursday at 11 p.m. on Disney XD. All right, since Danielle's not here, Danielle's off in Scotland having a good time being in Scotland on vacation, I'll say it for her. Be good or be good at it. Nope, that's wrong. That's not what we say anymore. She changed it. It's now be good and be good at it. Peace.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.